On this episode of Blue Dot, I'm joined by my special co-host Kate Fulham from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. Our guest is Sarah McSorley. Her new coloring book, Super Cool Scientists, is aimed at encouraging girls to see that careers in STEM fields are definitely open to them. It's all new and all blue. Join us next. Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. I'm joined by my good friend and special co-host, Kate Fulham from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. Our guest is Sarah McSorley. She recently published a coloring book aimed at girls called Super Cool Scientists. It profiles women in a variety of scientific disciplines. Sarah joins us via Skype. Sarah McSorley, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Your book is aimed at girls and boys as well as a way to encourage them to see that STEM fields are ripe for possible future careers. I'm wondering what the genesis of this was. Were you discouraged in any way to pursue a career in science, or were there people that really helped stoke your scientific curiosity?
So that both, I was both encouraged and discouraged sort of along the way at different points. So I was lucky enough to grow up with incredibly supportive parents who were really pushing me to do whatever I was interested in. And from a pretty early age, I realized I was really interested in marine science. I grew up on the eastern shore of Maryland on the Choptank River and was fascinated with everything that lived there in that environment. And so I went to school to study marine biology in college at the University of Rhode Island. And all along the way there, that was fantastic. I thought I knew what I wanted to do. And then I got to a point where I had my first research project, and there I was thinking I was going to be a researcher and realized I didn't really like it. And nobody had told me at that point what else you could do with a science degree. So that was sort of the point where it took me a little while to figure out what came next for me, just because I hadn't had that exposure to what other science careers could be at that point. So that was a little discouraging, especially because it was halfway through my junior year and I wasn't sure what I was going to do with this degree I was about to get.
Sarah, I had the same experience. I was about to graduate and I sat down with my advisor and I said, I really don't know. This marine science degree feels like a badge of honor. I'm smart enough to be a scientist, but I really want to help people learn to communicate about science, and I want to probably help run a nonprofit. So it seems like we have a really similar career path. I'm curious, was that a deliberate choice for you, or kind of serendipity that you just had that experience and moved towards a non-traditional science career path?
So it does sound like we have more in common than I thought we did. For me, I had some really fantastic mentors in college, the advisor for the marine biology program, and then also another person who was in charge of actually a science communication program at the University of Rhode Island. And I was lucky enough to really get to interact with them, and they sort of helped me figure out there are a lot of things you can do with a science degree, and got me more pointed towards the outreach and communication side of that. And, you know, I had some more work study jobs. There was that last year and a half in college, and got connected with some of those programs a little bit more and realized that was something I was really interested in. And it was still a way that I could have the science in my life, because I really like having the science as part of what I do. I just didn't want the research piece of it. So that was a good way where I got to have both and kind of realized what some of my other interests were in, you know, project management and the communication side of things.
That's terrific.
I'm curious about that. A lot of people I know decide that while they love science, scientific research isn't for them. I'm thinking of some of the great science communicators on YouTube, like Dr. Joe Hansen from It's Okay to Be Smart, and Diana Cowern, also known as Physics Girl. What is it that you think turns people toward or away from pure research careers?
When I had my first research project, it was during a study abroad semester. And it wasn't like I did it and I was like, oh my goodness, I hate this. I was looking around and seeing my friends and classmates and how much they were really into what they were doing. And I didn't feel like that about it. and I thought I would. So I decided, you know, I don't want to go into a career if I'm not going to be excited about what I'm doing. But I do have a lot of friends and colleagues now who are research scientists and love it. I think it's just like anybody's interests in anything. Some people are more interested in certain things, or because I still think very similarly to a lot of my friends who are research scientists. You know, the science process is always there kind of in my thinking, but it's just a different environment that I was looking for.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm your co-host, Kate Fulham, from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science, along with Dave Schlom. We're talking with Sarah McSorley, author of Super Cool Scientists, a coloring book celebrating women in science. So, Sarah, you were talking about, you know, just making science more accessible and how fulfilling that is. That's something that I can really identify with in my role at the Alda Center. I never wanted to be a researcher. I wanted to help people realize how cool it is to be a researcher and to, you know, uncover life's and nature's mysteries. And one of the really great things about the initiatives that I think that you're doing is making science accessible for children through this coloring book. The last time we spoke, I was telling you about a National Forest Service program, the Natural Enquirer, with the trading cards. Here at the Alda Center, we have the Flame Challenge, which makes science accessible to 11-year-olds throughout the world. Why did you choose a coloring book? Really, what made you inspired to choose that as a platform for communicating science to children?
So it was one of those things where the idea kind of came about with two things kind of happening in parallel. One of which was I was trying to find a project that brought more science back into what I was doing. I wasn't getting enough of it at my day job. So I was trying to come up with something that I could do as a side project. And I was also dealing with some of my own anxiety issues and realized that coloring was part of my toolkit that helped me deal with that. So I was actually just sort of searching for coloring books that I would be interested in and, you know, Googled women in science coloring book because I was like, wouldn't that be cool? And nothing came up. And we all know that never happens. And it was sort of in that moment that I realized, well, this could be my side project. So I started to think it through a little bit more. And I really liked how, you know, a coloring book made it so approachable and non-intimidating for kids. And it really was going to be an opportunity to showcase what scientists actually look like. So it doesn't just talk about what they do at work, but it's also talking about who they are as people. So, you know, what they like to do as kids, or that they like to walk their dog or spend time, you know, at the gym or at the rock climbing, whatever it might be, to really kind of showcase them just as their full dynamic selves and to really expose sort of that piece of it. So it was just really about these people's stories, but then also the fact that they happen to be scientists.
How did you go about choosing the people, the women that you are profiling in the coloring book?
So that's one of the most common questions that I get, and there's sort of a couple different answers. So a few of the women were people who I had looked up to over the years myself throughout my science career, like Dr. Sylvia Earle and Dr. Ashanti Johnson, some of the Marine people in the book. So some of them were people who I was already aware of and had looked up to myself, and then some others were based on connections I had from some prior work experiences. So where I worked after college was managing a National Science Foundation project that existed in about 30 different states. And so, you know, I could reach out to some of those colleagues and say, you know, this is what I'm working on. I'm looking for someone specifically who works in this area of science or in this field, or who works with native communities. You know, do you know anybody who might be interested? So I got some connections that way, which was really great. And then some of it was just based on internet research, thinking through which types of science I wanted to feature, because it was important to me to feature different types of science. So it was clear that, you know, it wasn't just the lab coat microscope research-based science. There's some of that too, but again, sort of the broad range of what a science career can actually look like. And then also a really wide range of people as individuals too, because I think the representation just of people is really important. So the diversity in the book was something I wanted to focus on too.
Sarah, last night I was reading a section of your coloring book to my daughter, who's almost 5 years old. And I know the topic is a little bit advanced for her, but she loved hearing about Maria Mayer and her adventures studying primates around the world, that she had, you know, been charged by elephants and bitten by snakes and everything. I think what you're saying about the diversity is so important, and I really commend you on that. I really think that girls, young girls, and women in STEM fields need mentors. And have you had any success stories of people that have read the book that really had some inspiration from this and considered these women mentors or inspiration?
Yeah, I have had several of those experiences already. And I get feedback. You know, some people write reviews of the book, other times it's former colleagues or friends who tell me about what their grandkids thought about it or their kids. And, you know, one of the experiences that I like to talk about, because it highlights so many of these things all in one little story, is I had an event a while back at a science center where we were coloring some of the pages from the book and talking to the visitors. And these two young girls came over to the table. They were maybe 8 and 10 years old. And they're looking at all the different profiles that we had out. And they found the one of Miriam, she's in biotechnology is what her field is. And the picture is her at a science fair with a student that she had mentored. And the girls just lit up and got so excited about her picture. And then they were calling their mom over to the table. And I realized that their mom is wearing hijab, and so is Miriam in the picture. So it was one of those moments where, you know, they weren't expecting to see someone who looked like their mom represented in this book. So when they noticed that, that was the first one that they wanted to learn more about and had all these questions about the work that she did. And so that was a pretty powerful, powerful moment.
Yeah, it's almost as if women and young girls need that permission to see someone that looks like them, that they can identify with, to really know that they can pursue a career in science.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, that doesn't have to be the case, right? So the other in the book, too, some of the people who are featured are just starting out in their careers. And other folks have been doing it for a really long time, where when they were taking their classes, there really weren't any other women at all who were in those classes. And in some fields, that still can be true. But, you know, you can find your mentors and your role models in anybody. But I think it definitely is easier when we see people that we know either look like us or we know something about their experience that we can relate to.
Absolutely.
That reminds me of a story about Jill Tarter, a friend of mine. When she took her engineering classes at Cornell, she was the only woman in the room, and they actually made her sit like in a corner in a cubicle where none of the guys in the room could even see her.
Right.
Wow, that sounds awful.
Yeah, so we've come a ways. You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom, along with my co-host Kate Fulham from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science, and we're talking to Sarah McSorley. She is the author of Super Cool Scientists, a coloring book about women in STEM fields. One of the things I noticed about the book is that, you know, at first when you hear a coloring book, you think of just, you know, children's thing. But the text is very engaging. You know, I think an adult would really enjoy reading it, or high school age kid. And you also mentioned that, you know, a lot of adults really enjoy coloring too.
Yeah, it's true. When I was putting the book together, I was really writing the bios with sort of an upper elementary, middle school age group in mind. And there's a glossary and a resource section at the back of it too, in case people want to learn more about certain science topics. But a lot of the feedback I get tends to be from either parents or teachers of younger kids. Even if they're not reading it themselves, having it read to them, they're still getting the exposure to, I can do whatever I want when I grow up, including be a fantastic STEM professional, and they're coloring it. But the audience that surprised me the most, that I wasn't really expecting, was how much college students really enjoy it. And I think that comes into play with sort of the adult coloring you know, that we see everywhere. And the college students are also tend to be a group who are really aware of some of these inclusion issues and are working on ways to kind of improve them as well. So they really like the project itself. And then it's just, it's fun. And they really enjoy it.
Yeah, Sarah, I think we've really hit on the fact that people need these type of mentors, and there's so many different audiences that can tap into this. I love that you tell the stories of struggle. I mean, Maria Mayer's story, it says that she has several children and that she always wants to show them that she can work hard and be involved in this field, even though it does take her away from them at times. So I love hearing those background stories, and it's something that we really focus on at the ALDA Center. I know that you went through our training at the ALDA Center. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it's helped you in communicating science in your work?
Sure. So I did your Summer Institute program a few years back, and it was really fantastic. I've done some work with a couple different communicating science programs. And I think the piece about the ALDA Center that's really different is the improv component. And it was also the first time where I was sort of testing some different forms of communication. Like, I remember it was at your institute where I did my first video interview as part of one of the exercises. And I had never seen myself on video in that way. And that was actually really, really useful in sort of thinking about how you approach things when you're on camera too, because communication is so much more than just the words that you use. And one of the other things I remember, which is true for all science communication, you know, how important your messaging is, and all of that depends on who your audience is. And it was actually the story I remember thinking through for that video interview was back when it was, I don't know, several years ago. And I was having a conversation with my brother, and he and I are very different. Science doesn't tend to be a topic that comes up when we're having conversations, but I had read an article about how climate change was starting to affect different wheat populations in the Northwest. And it was sort of written from the perspective of how it was going to change the microbreweries in that area. So I was having this conversation with my, you know, 21-year-old brother about beer and climate change. And it was just sort of this moment where two of our interests collided, and that didn't happen too often. So that was sort of one of the things I remember. And I still use that as an example of, you know, figuring out what that nugget of interest is going to be about your topic to sort of start the conversation with someone who might be coming at it from a different angle than you are.
And that leads me to a question, and just something I'd like to talk to you about is, it seems like we live in this very strange dichotomous time. On the one hand, you have these wonderful science communication vehicles going on, like on YouTube, all the wonderful science channels on there, podcasts, radio programs like this one, educational initiatives, and your coloring book. On the other hand, you know, we have a situation where a government is in place that has some open hostility to science, to say, you know, to put it bluntly. What are your thoughts on where we are in terms of our culture's view of science?
I think that's a very tricky question that we're all pretty aware of. And, you know, I've always been a big believer in do what you can with what you have where you are, and sort of through this project too, at the beginning when I was reaching out to people about it, you know, there were a few people who weren't into being included and sort of didn't want to be involved, but overwhelmingly the amount of people who were really supportive and validated it and were just like, I will be involved in any way that I can, was a good reminder that there are so many people out there who are advocates for science and who want it to be more inclusive and want the narratives to be more representative of the people doing the work. And I just really tried to focus on that. You know, for me, sometimes focusing on the other stuff makes it a little too discouraging. So trying to find those people who are supportive enough and on the same page to help me get it done. And then those are also the people who tend to, you know, we're trying to figure out how to talk about some of these topics differently. I mean, I think that's really the biggest piece that I don't always see happening in the world we live in, is it seems that, you know, whatever the two sides of the argument are, they tend to just kind of be arguing and not really communicating. And that's, you know, I'd like to figure out how we can get back to having more real conversations with people.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom, and joined by my special co-host, Kate Fulham, from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. Our guest is Sarah McSorley. Her new coloring book, Super Cool Scientists, aims to engage people of all ages to see that women are scientists with fascinating and often adventurous careers. We'll be back after a short break. Stay with us. And we're back. Let's return to our conversation with co-host Kate Fulham and our guest Sarah McSorley, author of the coloring book Super Cool Scientists. I think the key, you know, to what we were just discussing is to just have conversations with people and be honest and be yourself. And it's okay to realize that people might just totally disagree with you, but you can still have a pleasant conversation and then maybe shift it to something else.
Right. And realizing that you don't have to agree with everybody you're having a conversation with. You can still make it an interesting discussion as long as everybody's doing it in a respectful way.
I totally agree with you, Sarah. I've always been one to focus on the positive, and I think coloring couldn't be a better way to bring people together and de-stress. What are some other ways that you think we can get people of all ages, but especially younger people that are going to be the next generation of scientists, interested, engaged, and make science really accessible for them?
You know, I think a lot of that kind of exposure happens in sort of your non-traditional educational settings. So I remember, you know, for myself, a lot of that exposure came from, you know, different trips to museums and reading different books about science topics. And then it's sort of in doing those things, or even just in whatever, if you have a kid who really likes to be outside or take things apart and put them back, try to put them back together, sometimes successfully, sometimes maybe not, kind of figuring out what those moments are where there's an opportunity to talk a little bit more about the science that's involved there, or sort of the note that this is a skill set that comes in handy for people who are engineers. It doesn't mean you have to get super into the scientific concepts, but just sort of so young people have the awareness of, again, this is some of the stuff that you could do with a science degree or that's involved in a science job.
And I think that, when you look at what scientists do, and the scientists that I get to have the pleasure of talking to on this program all the time, they love their jobs. They love investigating nature. And for the vast majority of them, and it sounds like you too, a lot of that happened with just, you know, childhood trips out into nature where that nature's mysteries got their hooks into them.
Yeah, I think it's really just that sense of curiosity. You know, why does this work the way that it does? And I think kids are naturally curious in general. And I think that a lot of times that's just something that the people who end up being scientists hold on to. They want to understand how things work and why things are the way they are.
Yeah, I know at any time I've spoken with Alan Alda, he's always saying, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I really, truly am curious. And I have a love for puzzles and for nature and just exploring the beauty of that basic research and the questions that are out there in the world. So it's terrific, you know, to get kids involved. I also really identify with you, Sarah, on, you know, being involved in the environment and having Sylvia Earle as not a mentor, but an inspiration as a young girl getting involved in marine science. And she came to campus at Stony Brook University, where the Alda Center is located. And I had a few minutes to talk with her, and I kind of felt like a sellout that, you know, I took this marine science degree and I graduated with great grades, but that I wasn't in a submersible exploring the bottom of the sea. And she said, you know, everybody does have their own talents that they have to apply to the world. Mine just happened to be, you know, being this explorer and paving the way for a lot of other women to get involved in the sciences. I mean, it's just that permission aspect, I think, sometimes that people need. But I was really inspired by knowing that we can all contribute in our own way. So, Sarah, what's next for you?
So right now I'm actually working on a Super Cool Scientist Volume 2 that we're hoping to have finished by the end of this school year. So again, it's going to focus on an amazing cohort of women. We have about 16 of them on board already, and we'll be able to feature some fields of science that we didn't feature as much last time. So that's really exciting. The feedback we've gotten from the first one has been so fantastic. I just, you know, couldn't wait to get into to do it again.
I can't wait to get the copy.
Well, I know my talent is going to be for providing coloring books at Christmas time for some adults and kids. What's the best way to get a hold of Super Cool Scientists?
Right. So Super Cool Scientists is online on Amazon. It's also on Barnes & Noble online, so you could search for it that way. Or if you go to supercoolscientists.com, it will give you more information about the book and link you to my personal website, where there's more information about how to buy copies from either one of those places. Or if people are interested in bulk orders, I've done some of that with school districts and research conferences too. So, and our social media and everything is linked through that website, supercoolscientists.com.
Fantastic. Well, Sarah McSorley, thank you so much for joining us on Blue Dot.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Let's talk again soon, Sarah. Good luck with the Volume 2.
Thank you very much.
And Kate, thanks for joining me today and helping me out in our conversation with Sarah. That was a lot of fun.
It's always a pleasure, Dave. I'll see you again soon.
Thanks again to my special co-host, Kate Fulham, from the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science, and our guest, Sarah McSorley, author of the coloring book, Super Cool Scientists. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Listen to this and past episodes on mynspr.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our communications coordinator is Casey Gardner. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News or me at Dave Schlom. Our engineer is the man on the board, Nolan Ford. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, was written by Matt Schiltz. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.